The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, 4 million square feet. That's the amount of available sublease space in the Triangle, a trend overwhelming the commercial real estate market. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, office supply overwhelm. Sublease options are plentiful across the Triangle. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. In January 2021, less than a year into the pandemic, Google was looking for office space in Durham, but had run into issues during deal negotiations. Scott Selig, Associate Vice President for Capital Assets and Real Estate at Duke University, caught wind of it and thought to himself, I can make space available for somebody like Google. A month later, Google was signing a letter of intent to sublease 150,000 square feet at Durham ID downtown, sight unseen. Selig says because everyone was on lockdown, they couldn't provide a tour, so instead they took drone footage of the inside and sent it to Google. Shortly after that, Clorox was signing for 48,000 square feet of sublease space from Duke, and more subleases with other companies followed. Fast forward to now, and Selig says Duke hasn't signed any major leases in the past 6 months. That leaves it with about 250,000 square feet of office space sitting empty in downtown Durham and Research Triangle Park. We have 125,000 square feet in one building that I pay a rent check on every month, and I'm not using the building, Selig says. That is a hard cost that we have in the budget, but nobody likes to pay money on space that you're not using. Duke is not alone. Across the Triangle, there are about 125 companies handing over rent checks every month for office space they have vacated and want to sublease. But no one seems to want it, or more so, even need it. The amount of office space for sublease in the Triangle sits around 4.1 million square feet, according to a September report from real estate firm Savills. That number has dropped only a little for the past 4 months. The Triangle has 8 million square feet of vacant office space, bringing the total amount of empty office space to about 12 million square feet. By comparison, Charlotte had 3.1 million square feet, and Nashville, Tennessee had 2 million square feet of office sublease space in the second quarter, according to Savills. Even in the red-hot market of the Triangle, buildings that were once symbols of its growth, such as ICVIA, GSK, and Citrix, are now sitting empty and seeing little interest. Few companies are even looking at sublease space, let alone signing on to take it over. Duke Selig says there aren't any potential tenants even looking at Duke's sublease space. The reason that sublease office space isn't being rented out is similar to the reason direct space isn't. Not enough demand after the pandemic accelerated the trend of employees working from home. Any reduction in sublease space has been mainly due to leases expiring and the space being returned to the landlord for direct rental space, leaving little recourse on how to bring empty office space down. It all still equals empty office space that companies, brokers, and landlords are racing to fill. High supply. In 2019, there was about 1 million square feet of sublease office space on the market. That number has quadrupled since then as companies vacate their office space due to remote work and downsizing. A majority of the companies that have reduced their office footprint has been in technology and life sciences, as many have shifted to a work-from-home model. This puts much of the sublease space in RTP, 54% of it, or about 2.1 million square feet, according to Triangle Business Journal's space data, from the second quarter. GSK and ICVIA hold the most. GSK has just shy of 500,000 square feet available, while ICVIA has about 330,000 square feet. Due to hybrid work, GSK moved its office workers to its space in downtown Durham, occupying just 68,000 square feet in two buildings at the American Tobacco campus. GSK made that move in late 2021, putting its RTP space on the sublease market in January 2022. The massive space is two entire buildings that have been sitting empty ever since. The master lease on those two properties doesn't expire until the end of May 2028. The huge Citrix building in downtown Raleigh was built in 2014 and features a yoga studio, restaurant, and fitness center. Now, the 153,000 square foot building is empty. We've seen very little activity on large subleases. Anything over 50,000 square feet would need to attract a very large regional office or a corporate headquarters, and those spaces have ended up sitting on the market for quite some time, says Tucker Shade, executive vice president of Savills. Citrix is an amazing space. It is that flight to quality, but it's too big. There are a number of spaces that are over 50,000 square feet that odds are they will not get subleased. UNC Health is another company with a significant amount of square footage that it is trying to sublease. The company has been looking for tenants to take over its more than 300,000 square feet of administrative office space at its two Morrisville buildings. Alan Wolf, Director of News and Media Relations for UNC Health, says most of its non-clinical employees switched to either fully remote or a hybrid schedule, resulting in extra underutilized space. Both leases don't expire until March 2030, but with so much space to sublease, it's difficult to get companies to sign on, as very few are looking for that much space. So why are companies continuing to write rent checks for empty space instead of opting for an early termination of their lease? Don Shoup, Executive Vice President of CBRE Raleigh, says that those options aren't as common and typically only get added to lease terms of 10 to 15 years, leaving most of these companies locked into the space. Lease expirations are playing an important role in the reduction of sublease space. Shade says the main reason the Triangle has seen the consistent four-month decrease is because leases have expired and gone back to the landlord. This means that while it appears the market is getting healthier, it isn't, because it's simply going from empty sublease space to empty office space. Of the 177,214 square foot reduction from July to August, 83,496 of it was simply taken off the market because of lease expirations. Many of these were also in RTP and will now be spaces that landlords have to fill. This means that the rental rate for that space will go up, as the direct rate is higher than the sublease rate, and the vacancy rate for office space in the Triangle will increase. The vacancy rate is 14.3% across all classes, according to TBJ Research. While fewer companies are still making decisions that result in additions to the sublease market, about 92,000 square feet came online in August. According to the Savills sublease report, a little more than 1 million square feet of sublease space will expire by the end of 2025. Shade says it's highly unlikely any of that space will be subleased out, as companies are looking for 2 years or more left on the master lease. It will reduce the overall sublease market by 27%, helping knock down that high number the Triangle has seen. About 50% of Duke's 250,000 square feet will expire at the end of 2024, which means the university will be swallowing the cost of the remaining rent, along with additional unplanned fees. "We will have to pay to get the furniture moved out," Selig says. "But there are costs if they don't take the lease. You have to pay to empty and clean the building when you leave, and now there's not much market for used office furniture." Low demand. So why are so many companies having such a hard time finding companies to sign subleases when much of it even comes furnished? Shoup attributes it to three factors: flight to quality, lack of need, and large blocks of space. While a flight to quality has affected the Triangle office market, it's also affecting the sublease market. Shoup says that much of the sublease space is in suburban or Class B or C buildings with few to no amenities. With so many new office buildings opening up in the past couple of years that have loads of amenities and walkability, tenants are flocking to those spaces, especially if they're trying to lure employees back to the office. Pendo opened its shiny offices in the heart of downtown Raleigh with a 3-2-1 coffee and outdoor space. 1000 Social is getting ready to open its mid-rise tower in Midtown and will have ground floor retail and lots of outdoor space. The tower is already 51% pre-leased for office space. Companies aren't motivated to sign on for subleases that don't offer anything in the way of amenities. There are fewer companies looking now than there were pre-pandemic. Shade says the demand for space is significantly lower compared to what it was in 2019. Selig says there aren't many new or current companies looking to make moves, especially in RTP. Shoup adds that much of what is on the market is large spaces, but companies are looking for smaller spaces between 5,000 and 15,000 square feet. In addition to less square footage, companies are looking for sublease terms that fall between 2 to 5 years. "One of the hardest things is exposure at the end of the sublease term," says Fred Dickens, Senior Vice President of Trademark Office Leasing. He adds that tenants that sign sublease deals often have to deal with a new entity if they want to stay there. With COVID throwing a wrench in businesses' operations, some are looking for flexibility in their office space. Flexibility has come in the form of co-working space. Co-working businesses in the Triangle have seen an uptick in occupancy since COVID started. Trish Hathaway, Business Center Manager for Office Evolution in Raleigh, says its co-working space by the Crabtree Valley Mall is 80% occupied. I did see a shift, especially after COVID, that a lot of companies pulled out of their offices, and especially once their long-term traditional leases are coming due, that they're not just looking for single spaces, but they're also looking for something a little more flexible, Hathaway says. Our flex office plans are the ones that are really popular. Jason Wyden, founder and CEO of Raleigh Founded, says its average occupancy is around 80%, with some of that coming from bigger companies. More established companies have definitely become a bigger part of it, and then digital nomads and folks that work for large companies that are looking to get out of the house, that's been a big growth sector for us, Wyden says. Durham Bottling Company, which opened during the pandemic, has about a 60% occupancy and is signing new tenants so often that it's continuously adding more offices, according to founder Nick Jordan. Wyden noted that while sublease space didn't impact his business before, it has become more of a competitive landscape. Shade says that WeWork's recent financial woes have played a major role in companies looking to move from co-working space in the Raleigh and Durham WeWork locations to sublease space around the Triangle, referring to it as the WeWork effect. There are a number of companies that have been in WeWork space for some time that have now gotten nervous about the sustainability of WeWork, and they're striking out and looking to take down subleases to create a little bit more stability for their occupancy, Shade says. With this low demand and increased competition, brokers are getting creative in their efforts to market sublease space. Trademark Properties has taken the approach of contacting companies whose direct leases are ending in 6 to 12 months and making them aware of the vast array of sublease options in the market. Dickens says the teams have been pushing those sublease opportunities in hopes that the lower rates and perks like furniture will be enough to get them to choose a sublease space over direct space. In addition to rental discounts, CBRE has started offering incentives to their brokers for those who sign sublease space. Subleases are a little strange. You want to lease them as is. You don't want to put a lot of money into tenant improvements, Shoup says. So your levers are either incentivize the broker by offering an enhanced commission compared to typical market, or to incentivize with a lower than market level rate for the sublease space. Future of sublease. Some of those leases don't end until 2030 or later, giving some companies hope that somebody somewhere is going to sublease their space eventually. Still, Shoup says the Triangle will see a leveling off of sublease space that enters the market in the next 6 to 12 months, as most companies have made decisions regarding their space needs. The older or outdated sublease space will most likely sit empty for years, no matter how discounted it is, unless landlords renovate it after it returns to them, according to both Shade and Shoup. We're going to see tenants taking advantage of the discounted rates associated with sublease space. You're just simply going to see a shrinking of the supply of sublease space over the next 4 to 8 quarters, Shoup says. A lot of that is space that is going to go back to the landlords when these expirations happen, and the subleases just roll off the sublease books. That's going to contribute to the lessening amount of sublease space. At the same time, you may see an increase in vacancy across the market when those sublease spaces do get taken back by the various landlords. But the bottom line is, despite creative marketing and incentives, the sheer amount of sublease space in the Triangle will still sit empty. And companies will continue to shell out rent checks for empty space. Some have budgeted for the long haul, while others might have to slash costs to make budget each month. No one's lease is an asset, Shade says. Everyone's lease is an expense on their P&L, so what they're going to do is they're just going to have to realize the full expense without extracting any value from that space by their employees using it. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Biz column, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Bluegrass brings a boost. One of Raleigh's signature events is back this weekend and arrives at a time when downtown Raleigh can use some good news. The IBMA World of Bluegrass has been a hit since it drew 140,000 fans in 2013. Those numbers rose to 218,301 by 2019, as the festival was a marquee event on a downtown calendar that seemed increasingly jammed. But organizers will watch closely to see if those numbers return and have already announced that 2024 will be the last World of Bluegrass Festival in Raleigh before city organizers move to a new concept. There was no festival in 2020, and attendance for 2021 was just 101,368. Last year, Hurricane Ivan wrecked the weekend of the festival, which was moved indoors. The World of Bluegrass will be in town when downtown businesses are crunched by rising concerns about crime and high office vacancies that have dampened foot traffic. The Fayetteville Street Corridor businesses, they're the ones who are struggling the most, says Jennifer Martin, executive director of Shop Local Raleigh. She says some businesses are down 30 to 40%, although it depends on the type of business and exact location downtown. They count on these events and these big weekends, Martin says. Redeveloped office location adds tenants. The redevelopment of the former Martin Marietta headquarters has signed new office tenants, hitting 30% pre-leased. The Grove, a 152,000-square-foot office development by Chartwell Property Group of Raleigh and Jefferson River Capital, will have six additional tenants. Among those are Allbridge, a technology solutions company, and Vet Pride Services, a services provider for military installations, federal agencies, and more. The Grove is located on Wycliffe Road near UNC Rex Hospital. Townhomes on the rise in Raleigh. Townhomes are becoming increasingly attractive in Raleigh as home prices surge. In 2019, the city permitted 275 townhome units. In 2022, that figure soared to 1,016, and this year, more than 800 townhomes have been permitted so far, according to the city's planning department. Meanwhile, single-family homes fell from 978 units to 797 for the same time period. Producing single-family houses affordably is nearly impossible in Raleigh given the cost of land, material, and labor without government or nonprofit subsidy. Townhouses can allow buyers to have the same or nearly the same amount of living space for up to 15 to 20% less due to shared walls, roofs, and infrastructure, says Patrick Young, Director of Planning and Development for the City of Raleigh. Fab Fu makes the leap to Wade Avenue. A popular Raleigh boutique has a spiffy new home after the owner bought a building on Wade Avenue. Lori Sugg, after a long career in technology, opened the Fab Fu on Wake Forest Road in 2017. Looking to expand, she considered lease options but decided to buy her own space. In 2022, Sugg paid $1.8 million for the spot at 606 Wade Avenue that had housed J.S. Thompson Engineering. It's definitely a risk. We have to drive our own traffic. We are not drafting off of a shopping center, Sugg says. But we think that the benefits of it outweigh the risk of it. Months of work created a light-filled store with a variety of antiques, collectibles, and an extensive collection of vintage cocktail ware. Sugg, a Wilmington native and UNC Chapel Hill graduate, knows her audience. The Fab Fu showcases custom-made cocktail glasses for UNC and NC State University and other unique options. Her space rose from 1,600 square feet to 4,600, which allows more space for events and for online orders. The business today that can operate simply on in-person sales, good for them, Sugg says, but those businesses are fewer and farther between. The new location is a leap of faith, but features plenty of parking. To me, parking is like gold in retail in Raleigh now, she adds. UNC Health eyes major expansion. UNC Health is adding some heft to an ambitious effort to develop a facility that would serve as the state's flagship children's hospital. The health system secured an initial $320 million investment from lawmakers in the state budget. Now, UNC Health is looking to raise more than $1 billion from corporations, foundations, and individual donors, UNC Health spokesperson Alan Wolf says. UNC Health is still working on the location for the hospital, which it hopes to open within 8 to 10 years. And finally, Ghost Kitchen at RDU spotlighted. The Ghost Kitchen concept inside Raleigh-Durham International Airport is now Bobby Flay approved. A recent segment by CNN spotlighted the Get Reef virtual food hall inside Terminal 2. Local entrepreneur Jason Johnson showed famed chef Flay how to order food from the concept's multitude of brands and then retrieve it from an assigned locker, all without ever interacting with a human. The interview is part of the Restaurant Nation What's Changed series on the show The Whole Story with Anderson Cooper. Flay travels the country to see how the pandemic changed the restaurant industry. The episode aired live on CNN and can now be viewed on the streaming platform Max. Johnson also owns Hub Kitchens, a ghost kitchen operator with multiple locations in the Triangle. And now we turn to our top news story in the Triangle Business Journal. This is written by Zach Ezone. $20 million mock manufacturing facility opens in Morrisville. A consulting firm that works with life sciences companies has invested more than $20 million in a mock pharmaceutical manufacturing facility in Morrisville to train its new employees. Sequence Incorporated built out the 44,000-square-foot facility on Perimeter Park Drive over the past year to address talent shortages in biomanufacturing and the need to produce drugs faster and more efficiently. As a consulting firm, Sequence focuses on commission, qualification, and validation, which involves the processes that pharma companies undergo to design and test manufacturing systems prior to receiving regulatory clearance. Sequence, which has about 270 employees, sends consultants to site locations to help clients bring new manufacturing facilities and equipment online. Its new training facility enables Sequence to provide new hires, many of whom are recent engineering graduates, with hands-on training over an 8-week program. Sequence over the summer brought in 67 new hires who went through this program, says CEO Mike Putnam. The company is hiring about 90 new employees this year and expects to hire another 100 next year. With its recruiting approach, the company says it is able to reach a broader pool of candidates than it would by recruiting from competitors and clients. This is important in an industry that is undergoing a talent shortage. Sequence is trying to address this issue by emphasizing an employee's exposure to different types of equipment and systems rather than years of experience, says Justin Cook, Vice President of Talent Management for Sequence. Sequence's decision to invest in this project was partly in response to the influx of new biopharma manufacturing facilities that have been announced or have come online in recent years. This includes local projects such as Fujifilm Diosynth's $2 billion facility in Holly Springs and Eli Lilly and Company's $450 million expansion in Research Triangle Park. The company also has also worked on a cell and gene therapy projects, an area of medicine that, after years of momentum, is experiencing a slowdown as venture capital funding has pulled back. But Sequence anticipates investment in these projects will rise again. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. We start first with Lauren Onosorge's page on tech and finance. Wilson man gets stiff sentence for PPP fraud. Local businessman was connected to schemers from Texas. As the sentencing date gets closer for a Texas couple accused of working with more than a dozen Triangle area business owners to defraud the federal Paycheck Protection Program, their alleged co-conspirators face stiff prison terms. The latest is Isaac Lamont Dawson, who pleaded guilty in May to conspiracy to commit wire fraud for fraudulently obtaining PPP loans, a COVID-19 relief program administered by the U.S. Small Business Administration to protect jobs during the pandemic. This month, U.S. District Judge James C. Deaver III sentenced the Wilson business owner to 3 years in prison for his role in the scheme, the longest sentence yet in the case. Dawson is one of 16 people to plead guilty in the scheme so far, and prosecutors say Texas couple Edward Whitaker and Shunda Coleman, both set to be sentenced in December, are at the center of the ring. The married couple collectively facilitated the fraudulent disbursement of more than $15 million in loans through the Paycheck Protection Program and Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, prosecutors claim in criminal information filings. Both Whitaker and Coleman have already pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit money laundering. They face up to 20 years in prison, and their attorneys aren't commenting on the case. It was Whitaker and Coleman, multiple criminal information filings allege, that created a system that made it easy for business owners like Dawson to bilk the government out of millions of dollars meant for distressed companies. They created fraudulent supporting documents and applications for PPP loans and delivered detailed instructions on how to make it appear that the money was going toward employees, multiple criminal information filings state. The length of the sentences being handed down for COVID relief fraud charges could signal what to expect for Whitaker and Coleman. Michael Easley, U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of North Carolina, says recent sentences show how seriously the court is taking PPP fraud. Even relatively small dollar PPP loans that were deemed to be fraudulent are getting federal prison time, he says. How a dog inspired a startup launch. Zach Ayo and Jennifer Wu will tell you they have the perfect dog, a couch potato adventurer named Karu, who would inspire their pet food startup in 2021. Ayo and Wu worked in tech, he at Capital One and she at Appian, but much of their lives centered around Karu, their dog. As they worked full-time, they weren't able to devote the time to creating whole meals for their baby, so they looked for easy options. The fresh pet food options they were finding were super gray and mushy, they say. So they decided to come up with their own solution for Karu, and that became a pet food startup that they went all in on during the pandemic. Viva Raw is completely bootstrapped, something AO said is the long-term strategy. We want to control our destiny, he said. And finally, lack of mail delivery hurts RTP startups. More than 2 weeks after Research Triangle Park's top business leaders demanded mail delivery service from the U.S. Postal Service, they're still in limbo, and that includes startups operating out of places such as Frontier RTP and First Flight Venture Center. Lawmakers and business leaders, including from some of the region's largest employers, such as IBM, Credit Suisse, and Biogen, sent letters to U.S. Postmaster Louis DeJoy on September 6 asking for carrier delivery service, something that, despite all the growth in RTP, they're still not getting. But they still are waiting for a response. And now we turn to On Healthcare and Higher Ed, written by Zach Ezone. Verona, triple space, plans for growth. Public pharma based in Raleigh prepares for a commercial launch. As it moves toward the commercial launch of its lead drug, a public pharmaceutical company is expanding its presence in Raleigh. Verona Pharma is moving into an office more than three times the size of its existing space to support its growth as it awaits the potential regulatory approval of ensifentrine, an inhaled maintenance treatment of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Verona, in late August, agreed to sublease about 32,000 square feet of space on Six Forks Road from the technology firm Insight Software, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. CEO David Zaccardelli says Verona plans to move from its existing office, which covers less than 10,000 square feet, in the Briar Creek area in December. As it makes this move, Verona is growing its headcount. It has more than 60 employees, with most based in Raleigh, and plans to reach nearly 80 this year. Verona expects its headcount to reach about 200 by the end of 2024. Many of these will be regionally based pharmaceutical sales personnel, but the growth of the company's core infrastructure will be focused in Raleigh, Zaccardelli says. Verona also has operations in the United Kingdom. By focusing its growth in Raleigh, Verona will pull from the talent available in the Triangle. It's also an area that Zaccardelli knows well, having worked in the local pharma industry for more than 20 years. This includes beginning his career at Burroughs, Wellcome & Company, and later holding several senior management roles at United Therapeutics, including chief operating officer. Zaccardelli was also the CEO of Durham's Dova Pharmaceuticals prior to the firm's acquisition by Swedish Orphan BioVitrum for up to $915 million in late 2019. Zaccardelli joined Verona in early 2020 alongside Chief Financial Officer Mark Hahn, who previously filled the same role at Dova. Since then, Verona has focused on the clinical development of ensifentrine. This culminated with two Phase 3 clinical trials, which produced results that Zaccardelli described as incredibly positive. These results supported the company in June filing a new drug application with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. UNC ends dispute over royalties from stem cell technology. UNC Chapel Hill and two biotechnology companies have reached the end of a years-long legal dispute. The university in August 2021 filed a lawsuit in North Carolina Business Court against Vesta Therapeutics and Phoenix Songs Biologicals, accusing them of breaching license agreements tied to stem cell technology owned by UNC. The university claimed it has missed out on potentially millions of dollars in royalties because the companies did not uphold their end of the agreements. But Vesta and Phoenix Songs pushed back and argued the university failed to fulfill its obligations under the agreements. UNC and the companies reached a settlement agreement, filing a joint stipulation of dismissal September 19. The court filing states that all parties agree to dismiss with prejudice the claims and counterclaims that were part of the case and that each party would cover its own costs and attorney's fees. Without detailing what led to the settlement, a UNC spokesperson says, "The university is pleased both parties came to a mutually agreeable resolution that validates our approach to following best practices for industry-sponsored collaborations and recognizes Carolina's role as a leading research institution." And finally, Nighthawk Biosciences cuts jobs. A biopharmaceutical company in Morrisville is slashing its headcount by 14% in an attempt to reduce expenses as its cash dwindles and it tries to shift strategy. The board of directors of Nighthawk Biosciences, formerly known as Heat Biologics, on September 18 approved a restructuring plan that will see the company shed non-core assets and reduce operating costs to focus on other areas of the business. The company, with fewer than 100 employees, is laying off 13 workers and substantially scaling back its research and development efforts, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. And now we turn to Laura Bromet's page on retail and restaurants. Downtown shop taps market for luxury. Decree Company does custom letter pressing on original machines. Decree Company, that's spelled D-E-C-R-E-E, a custom stationery store and luxury gift shop, has made it to the one-year mark of operating in downtown Raleigh. The storefront is located at 135 East Martin Street. The 6,000-square-foot shop is unlike anything found in the Triangle. Its merchandise is sourced from unique international suppliers, including Italian designer Versace. But it's the shop's room of large antique equipment that sets it apart. Decree is one of the few stationers left in the world that does custom letter pressing and engraving with original machines. This type of equipment needed was discontinued around the 1960s, co-owner Robert Bueller says. "There's no such thing as a 2023 HP letterpress machine. They just stopped making them," Bueller says. "In order to do this very artful form of card making, you have to use these machines, and these types of machines are very rare and they're hard to find." The team sourced the machines from all over the country, he says. A portion of the storefront space is dedicated to production, with customers able to view the rare equipment. Decree offers custom stationery services with options that include business cards, wedding announcements, and party invitations. The retail portion of the shop sells custom greeting cards made in-house, as well as a variety of specialty items. Some of its bestsellers are Passati umbrellas. The umbrellas sold at Decree range from $210 to $890. The store also sells Smithson leather products. The leather maker's clients include the United Kingdom's royal family. Decree was founded by Bueller and his business partner Ryan Dart. The pair began their letter pressing and engraving as a hobby 3 years ago and decided to turn the craft into a business last year. The shop is funded by personal funds along with a handful of investors, including Jeff Stocks, the former CEO of Manpower Group and current head of the Nautical Group. New pickleball facility opens in Wake Forest. A new pickleball company has opened a location in Wake Forest, and more Triangle locations are planned. Pickles and Play opened an indoor pickleball facility, the first of its kind in the Triangle, located at 7740 Merritt Capital Drive in Wake Forest. The facility features seven indoor courts across 18,000 square feet of space. The local ownership team includes Rick Seymour, Wells Martin III, Jay Bircher, and Lane Etheridge. The facility offers memberships, training programs, leagues, tournaments, youth camps, and private event bookings. Paid members have the option to book pickleball courts up to 14 days in advance, an offering that is not currently available in the Triangle, Seymour says. A second location is in the works at 7310 Millhouse Road in Chapel Hill. A third location is planned for the South Cary and Apex area. And our last article on this page, upscale restaurant nears opening. Upscale dining is finally coming to Knightdale. The Depot on First, a restaurant located inside a historic house, plans to open the first week of October. The project began just before the pandemic and has since evolved to include a larger space and outdoor dining. The restaurant will serve American-style fare, including steaks, seafood, and pasta, with entrees ranging from $20 to $80. The atmosphere is meant to be modern and upscale while incorporating the space's history. The restaurant is located at 608 North First Avenue in a Sears catalog house dating to 1935, according to Wake County property records. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page on Greater Triangle Growth. Charlotte firm plans big Clayton project. Hopper Communities has added 146 acres, seeks 450 homes. One of North Carolina's fastest-growing counties has attracted yet another massive development. Charlotte developer Hopper Communities is asking to rezone more than 146 acres off Vinson Road in Clayton to clear the way for a subdivision with more than 450 housing units. The plans call for a maximum of 207 townhomes and 250 detached homes. Bill Harrell, Raleigh development partner with Hopper Communities, says the neighborhood will offer four different housing types and price ranges to help fill the need for more housing in the market area. Harrell declines to provide price and square footage estimates for the housing units. In Johnston County, the median sales price for homes easily topped $350,000 in August, although it was a slight drop from a year ago, according to Triangle MLS data. Although no builder has been selected at this stage in the process, we anticipate there will be significant interest from the building community, Harrell says. This particular site is situated on almost 150 rolling acres that backs up to the Neuse River with a large natural pond. The neighborhood will have approximately 40% of the total acreage set aside as natural open space as well. Harrell says amenities will include a pool, cabana, and a mix of dog parks, playgrounds, multi-purpose fields, and tennis or pickleball courts. Hopper hopes to begin work in late 2024 or early 2025, with the first homes being ready by late 2025, according to Harrell. Two Johnston County-based LLCs, Rocky Branch Farm and Pool Family Farm, acquired the land the proposed subdivision would sit on in 1997. With Clayton gaining more than 13,000 residents between 2010 and 2022, according to U.S. Census Bureau estimates, housing projects are popping up across the town to account for the new residents. For example, Triangle Business Journal reported in April that plans for a massive Clayton development called River Muse, located on 277 acres between the Neuse River and NC Highway 42 on the east side of town, call for up to 825 new residential units. Waffle House plans second Sanford location. National restaurant chains are pouring into Sanford as the city continues to grow. A Waffle House is being planned for Sanford near the intersection of US 1 Highway and Tramway Road, according to plans submitted to the Sanford Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee. The Waffle House building will be a new construction and will be approximately 2,200 square feet, according to planning documents. Walter Barineau, a real estate representative for Waffle House, declines to comment on plans for the location. Founded in 1955 and headquartered in the Atlanta metropolitan area, Waffle House has more than 2,000 locations across the country and is focused on the Southeast. The restaurant, the breakfast restaurant chain, has more than 100 locations throughout North Carolina, including one in Sanford at 2621 South Horner Boulevard. And finally, new bioscience park takes step forward. A proposed industrial park aimed at bringing life sciences jobs to Johnston County cleared a major hurdle on the path to becoming a reality. Clayton Town Council voted during an at times tense meeting recently to approve a rezoning request from the town of Clayton for nearly 69 vacant acres off Little Creek Church Road to change from residential estate zoning to industrial heavy zoning to clear the way for a development called Project Life Dust. The development could have up to three speculative industrial buildings that would target companies in life sciences and biopharma industries. And our last reporter page is written by Kaylee Thompson on real estate. RTP building paused as leases sought. Hub RTP looking to be 30% leased before it starts to rise. A 265,000 square foot building set for the massive Hub RTP development won't be going vertical until it's at least 30% pre-leased. Real estate developer Longfellow is planning an 8-story lab and office building on the corner of Davis Drive and Sand Car Way between Interstate 40 and Highway 55. The building, called VIA, is fully designed and permitted, but Longfellow wants tenants on board before moving forward with fully financing the project. Managing Director Greg Kapp says the building needs to be somewhere between 30 to 50% pre-leased before they pull the building out of the ground. He declined to give an estimated cost for the development. The company is hoping to start construction by this time next year with an 18 to 20 month timeline for the build-out. Between the softening of the life sciences sector in the Triangle and a tightened debt market, real estate developers are hesitant to start construction on office buildings. At the beginning of the year, commercial real estate analysts predicted that very few companies would be breaking ground this year because the financial guarantee had to be there, and it simply isn't. In the Triangle, Flex Lab vacancy increased to 17.3% in the second quarter from 16.6% the prior quarter. Longfellow hasn't yet signed any pre-leases for VIA, but says there has been interest. The company, with offices in Boston and the Triangle, anticipates some clients in other Longfellow buildings might be interested in expanding into the new space at Hub RTP. Kapp says Longfellow is pursuing regional, national, and global companies in an effort to secure a large lease so it can move forward with starting construction. VIA will feature purpose-built space next to a parking deck for Hub RTP. The first floor will have a 1,579-square-foot fitness center, outdoor fitness lawn, showers, a training room, a lobby, and a 7,300-square-foot office and lab space. The office and lab on the first floor has higher ceilings than any of the other spaces, so there is the option for a company that is a light manufacturer to come in rather than solely for research and development. $150 million project with apartments retail set for Garner. Development south of Raleigh is heating up as a New York company moves forward with a $150 million project after receiving rezoning approval from the town of Garner. KDM Development Corporation is anticipating breaking ground on Swift Creek Apartments by the end of this year, according to Senior Vice President Kenyon Burnham. Swift Creek will have 613 multifamily units and 22,500 square feet of retail space on Fayetteville Road, Highway 401, between Partee Shack and Garner Country Club. There will be 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units spread across 12 buildings that will each be 4 stories. Burnham says the company estimates rents will range from about $1,500 for the smallest 1-bedroom units to $2,500 for the larger 3-bedroom units. In addition to the apartments, there will be 18 carriage units. And finally, TMLS partners with UNC to seek insights. A 2-year research partnership will bring new insights and analysis to the residential real estate industry in the Triangle. Triangle MLS and UNC Chapel Hill's Keenan Flagler Business School are collaborating on a program that will provide in-depth regional real estate and housing industry research in a quarterly report. The first report will be on the third quarter 2023 and released to the public around October 15, according to a TMLS statement. Specifically, the partnership is with the Leonard W. Wood Center for Real Estate Studies at UNC. Matt Fowler, the executive director of TMLS, says the agency realized it had a significant amount of data that it needed to answer questions about in a more authoritative manner. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page. In this edition, we have a guest column written by Rob DeGisi, who is the founder and president of Iron Horse Marketing, a sports marketing consultancy. He also teaches at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. The headline, "Is There a Next Chapter of College Sports?" In college sports, as of now, student-athletes are not employees. Therefore, they cannot be members of a union, and they are not tied to a scholarship in the same way that a National Basketball Association or a Major League Baseball player is tied to a contract. If the student-athlete doesn't like his place on the team or is lured away for more money, the athlete can transfer without restrictions to his or her eligibility. The financial incentive to transfer is not limited to more opportunity to monetize their NIL, name, image, and likeness, but includes compensation from collectives, in other words, legal booster payments. There is no collectively bargained free agency system, no salary arbitration, and no luxury tax systems in place to ensure competitive balance among the teams in a conference or on a national scale. There is a truly free market. Universities want to put themselves in a position to maximize financial opportunity. They've learned that sports are the ultimate platform to build a national brand to attract students, prospective faculty, donors, and corporations who recruit employees on campus. Most importantly, major college sports fortify the bond between alumni and their alma mater. In the Board of Regents versus the NCAA 1984, Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens wrote that the NCAA plays a critical role in the maintenance of a revered tradition of amateurism in college sports. The new NCAA president, Charlie Baker, is challenged by trying to lead a diverse set of stakeholders with an assortment of disparate agendas toward a delicate balance. He wants to seize financial rewards while maintaining the revered traditions that have built the product's foundation. There are myriad competing forces complicating the task. 350-plus Division I athletic programs, the broader priorities of university presidents and trustees, an increasingly powerful college football playoff organization, and media partners paying billions for production and distribution rights. He also needs to navigate through legal obstacles, most prominently the protections offered by antitrust laws. He is faced with a patchwork of various state NIL laws and gaining support among a fractious political community in order to advance a federal legislative solution. Critics of the rapidly changing world of college athletics are crying for new structures and new rules. However, such changes are exceedingly difficult to implement. Pro sports leaders have the luxury of players' unions to form collective bargaining agreements that provide their own set of rules and regulations. Without such an agreement, the leagues would be in violation of antitrust laws. College presidents, athletics directors, and conference commissioners are constrained by such laws in crafting a structure that allows for individual incentives, provides competitive balance, and maintains the so-called amateur ideal. The current court has certainly departed from Justice Stevenson's remarks in 1984. In NCAA v. Alston 2021, Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote in the concurring opinion, "Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate." There is no simple solution, and without federal regulation, we're headed to a situation where we do away with the charade that the athlete is an enrolled student, at least for revenue-generating sports. Perhaps we will transition to a model for football and basketball, where a university simply licenses its intellectual property and leases its facilities to a professional organization. There could be two distinct segments of D1 college athletics and college football structured like minor league baseball, with AAA, AA, and A designations. Maybe that's what the market demands. And now we'll read the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is 800. That's the number of temporary Triangle employees let go this month by Millennium Print Group, which is owned by Pokemon Company International and prints trading cards and related packaging. $116 million. That's the price tag for the new UNC School of Medicine in Chapel Hill. The 172,000-square-foot facility replaces Berry Hill Hall, which opened in 1970. And our next number, $2.65 billion. That's how much Consigli Construction Company reported in revenue last year, ranking it among the top 50 contractors in the nation. The Massachusetts firm has picked Raleigh as its first market location in the South. The firm will hire more than 50 employees in the region. $527 million. That's roughly the amount Vietnamese electric vehicle manufacturer VinFast lost for the three-month period ending June 30 per its quarterly earnings report. And the next number is $84.75 million. That's how much the still-under-construction Kelby Farms apartments in Durham sold for to Raleigh investment partner KPI Residential, according to Durham County deed records. And now we'll read this edition's quotable sections that are also sprinkled throughout this edition. The first one is from Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority Board Member Dickie Thompson on approving a more than $9 million contract amendment with RSNH for final design of the new international runway that is expected to be completed by 2028. We only have one chance to get this runway right. If it takes $9 million, that's what we're going to do. Next, we have Stephen Lawler, president and CEO of the North Carolina Healthcare Association, on his decision to retire at the end of 2024. It has been and continues to be the privilege of a lifetime to serve as CEO of the Healthcare Association and support the amazing people who provide such outstanding care to North Carolina residents and communities. And Mackenzie Wilson, Grub Ventures Director of Commercial Leasing, on new tenant announcements for Raleigh Ironworks, Amelia's Flowers, and Urban Pathos, will join the project this fall. While we continue to curate a distinctive community of businesses at RIW, the benefit of offering move-in-ready space allows local and first-generation companies to succeed in today's market. And our next quotable is from Randy Wester, CEO of Wester Auction and Realty Incorporated, on a 22-acre site in Chatham County, up for auction near the proposed VinFast electric vehicle plant. It's a great business opportunity, but even just the acreage alone as to where it's located has got to be worth a lot of money. And finally, we have Trisha Hathaway, Raleigh Business Center Manager, Office Evolution. Nobody is sure what the future holds, and they're still kind of nervous about taking those long-term steps, so we just make it easier. Even the temporary people are still staying 6 to 9 months, where they just signed on thinking, I'll only be here for a month or two. And now, in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to 52 Shades of Success, the Latino Influence. The headline on this continuing series, Economic Equity Comes into Focus, How the Latino Community Credit Union is Making More Loans Available to Low-Income Individuals. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52 Shades of Success, the Latino Influence, explores the challenges and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by those in the Latin American community from all across the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. This 52-week project will also dive into important trends and issues relating to the DEI sector. The MBA program at UNC Chapel Hill's Kenan Flagler Business School was the initial draw that brought Vicky Garcia and her husband to the States in 2001. But what kept them here was the unique business model of credit unions in the U.S., where improving the financial well-being of their members is the top priority. In her native Colombia, where she worked at Citibank, Garcia says there aren't financial institutions with that purpose-driven mindset. Here we are able to apply our business knowledge to an organization that has meaning and purpose, that is helping communities that don't have access to the mainstream financial system, says Garcia, who was named CEO and president of the Latino Community Credit Union in June after having worked at LCCU for more than 20 years. The LCCU mission is to create access to economic opportunity and enable their members to build credit, grow savings, and achieve home ownership. Since launching in 2000, the credit union has loaned more than $1.8 billion and grown to 132,000 members with assets totaling $970 million. What makes those accomplishments even more notable is that 80% of its members are low-income individuals. 65% did not have a banking relationship prior to LCCU, and 35% were establishing credit for the first time when they joined LCCU. If that sounds too risky to be realistic, think again. The loan repayment rate at LCCU is 99.3%, and they haven't had a mortgage foreclosure since 2012, according to the credit union. However, what makes the LCCU business model sustainable and successful is the institution's commitment to impact investing and its partnerships with mission-aligned organizations. Normally, deposits are used to fund the loans a financial institution provides, but we serve low-income individuals with an average deposit much lower than other financial institutions, around $3,800 per person, where in bigger credit unions, it's about $9,000 per member, Garcia says. To bridge that gap, they encourage large anchor organizations in the community, hospitals, universities, local nonprofits, and foundations to deposit their money into LCCU where it can be used to provide loans to the members. There's a lot of talk around support local, buy local, and you can do the same thing with your money. Instead of having your deposits in a big bank making shareholders very rich, you can deposit it in the credit union where it helps people who wouldn't be able to get a loan at those big banks, she says. Deposits from organizations that want to support the population LCCU serves range from thousands of dollars to seven-figure accounts. These are not charitable donations. They are deposits earning interest comparable to other financial institutions. What is important to them is not only the strong return on their deposits, we pay the market price, the same as big banks, but also that they have a bigger impact with their money because it can be lent to those in need, so the return is much bigger because of its social impact, Garcia says. The difference is here, you put your money where your heart is. Duke University has been a long-standing partner, and Stephanie Williams, vice president for Durham and Community Affairs at Duke University, says their relationship spans more than two decades. We have witnessed its growth from a nascent credit union into a nationally recognized model for financial inclusion, Williams says. People of color represent 97% of the membership at LCCU, and typically new members join because they need a loan or they need an account where they can receive direct deposits from their employer. Women account for almost half, 46% of LCCU borrowers, and 93% of loans go to Latinos. 50% of our mortgage borrowers are sole proprietors, and what that means long term is that they're able to use this equity built in their homes to expand their businesses, Garcia says. We see a lot of our members use refinancing as another tool to build equity and economic growth for their family and their small business. Susan Shoemaker, president of Cone Health Foundation, the community-focused sister organization of Greensboro-based Cone Health System, was introduced to LCCU in 2018 and says the money they deposit into CDs at LCCU is a way to augment the foundation's grant-making to address health inequities. We know social drivers of health, things like housing, economic security, education, can control up to 80% of health outcomes, so we're focused on what we can do in a meaningful way to affect this. Shoemaker says, an investment at LCCU makes so much sense because when we buy CDs, it provides them with capital to lend. We are investors in other CDFIs, but I love what LCCU does for low-wealth families, and they pay strong interest rates to depositors, so it benefits everybody. And we'll go ahead and stop there. As the rest of the article mentions how they're upgrading their systems and planning to move beyond microloans, because right now all of their loans, like small business loans, are up to $50,000. And we run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.